When a celebrity's sex tape leaks, the world assumes it's just another invasion of privacy, another woman exploited for profit and spectacle. But this one is different. The actress, a rising A-list darling with a clean image, doesn't cry foul. Instead, she steps forward with a powerful statement, "I was violated. This was revenge porn." The media swarms to her defense. Women rally behind her, and her ex, a rising actor himself, becomes public enemy number one. But what if none of it was true? What if she wasn't the victim, but the mastermind? In a brutal, high-stakes game of fame, image, and manipulation, she orchestrated the entire leak, down to the timing, the outrage, and the backlash, all to destroy a rival, rebrand her image, and sign a multi-million-dollar deal that would secure her place in Hollywood forever. This isn't just a scandal. It's psychological warfare wrapped in silk and sex appeal. Because behind the perfect smile is a woman who understands one thing. The real power in Hollywood isn't who gets exposed. It's who controls the story. So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Leak. The moment it hit the internet, time froze. It was 3:21 a.m. in Los Angeles, the hour when publicists sleep lightly and gossip sites never do. On a shadowy forum that trafficked in stolen moments and digital cruelty, a 30-second clip appeared. Grainy, intimate, unmistakable. Lana Hart, moaning, exposed. The kind of footage that couldn't be staged, because it was never supposed to be seen. She was on all fours, backlit by candlelight, gasping a name the audio barely caught. Ethan. Her face turned to the side, only visible for a fraction of a second. But that second was enough. No makeup, no filter, just raw vulnerability. Her voice was soft and desperate, but it hit the internet like an atomic bomb. By 3:37, the file had been reposted to Reddit, 4chan, and three WhatsApp groups in Beverly Hills. By 4:12, it had 68,000 downloads. By 7:00, TMZ ran a developing story. By 9:00, Lana Hart's phone had 117 missed calls. She didn't answer any of them, because Lana wasn't shocked. She was rehearsing. At precisely 10:08 a.m., a scheduled post dropped on her official Instagram. A photo of Lana sitting in silhouette against a large bay window, dressed in a loose cream sweater, her knees curled to her chest. The caption read, "What happened to me is not just a betrayal, it's a violation. I trusted someone I loved, and he weaponized that trust. I will not be shamed. I will not be silent." No hashtags, no press release, just heartbreak. The internet exploded. Again, celebrities rallied to her defense. Blue-check feminists called for Ethan's arrest. Talk show hosts opened their monologues with tributes to Lana's bravery. Articles appeared within the hour titled, "Why Lana Hart's Story is Every Woman's Nightmare." The world saw a woman wronged. What they didn't see was the spreadsheet. On a password-protected hard drive in Lana's manager's office sat a folder titled Phoenix. Inside, a 6-week media rollout plan, a mood board, projected brand endorsements, and a schedule for a morning show appearance, scripted down to the line, "I'm not just surviving, I'm reclaiming my narrative." What the public mistook as a knee-jerk statement was, in fact, the final act of a campaign so precise it could have passed for a Pentagon op. Because Lana hadn't been violated. She'd leaked the tape herself. 3 months earlier, Lana sat in the rooftop lounge of the Henry with a woman known only in certain circles as the cleaner. She didn't appear in photos, no Instagram, no LinkedIn. But her work was infamous. She fixed broken careers the way surgeons remove tumors, with skill, precision, and no regard for pain. Lana wore oversized sunglasses and a black cashmere coat. The cleaner wore beige. No jewelry, no scent, no smile. Lana's opening line wasn't even a question. I want to burn everything down and rise from it. The cleaner blinked once. What are we talking? Cheating scandal? Secret child? Rehab diversion? Lana leaned in. Sex tape. The cleaner tilted her head slightly. Who's the victim? Me, Lana said, sipping green tea, but not really. That was the day the plan was born. Ethan Cole had no idea he was being framed. Tall, dark-haired, with a disarming smile and an indie heartthrob following, Ethan had dated Lana for 18 months before they broke up, amicably, publicly, and civilly. In reality, it ended in her apartment at midnight with three words, "You're in the way." He thought she meant emotionally, that she needed space. What she really meant was career-wise. Lana was aiming higher than red carpets and fragrance deals. She wanted global icon status, legacy. She was tired of being almost nominated, almost cast, almost adored, and she blamed Ethan for her proximity to mediocrity. He wasn't big enough, and worse, he was competition. The tape had been filmed a year earlier in Positano, Italy. Lana's idea. She'd lit the candles, chosen the angles, whispered directions as he moved behind her. At the time, Ethan thought it was intimacy, a shared thrill, but Lana was studying the footage like it was dailies. After the breakup, Lana retrieved her old iPhone from storage. It still worked. The file was untouched. She watched it again, coldly this time. Zoomed in, cropped, looped. The moan at 0:14, the half-smile at 0:22, the vulnerable glance at 0:27. It was perfect. She copied the file to a burner laptop. She hired a private VPN routing expert under a fake name, Cassandra Moon. She purchased two burner phones, used cash, wiped the serial numbers. One phone was used to upload the video to a hidden mega account. The other would send an anonymous tip to TMZ, the New York Dispatch, and one strategic feminist blogger known for viral outrage. She didn't want just scandal. She wanted a movement. The leak was timed for maximum impact. 3:21 a.m. was the golden window, when bots scraped content for early morning aggregation, but before lawyers could wake up and issue takedown orders. The anonymous email subject line read, "Celebrity exploited by her famous ex, you decide." By 6, TMZ had the story. By 8, the cut ran a piece titled, "When Consent is Weaponized." By 9, Ethan was trending under Dacre Cancel Ethan. By noon, Lana's team had locked in 4 sponsorship deals, 2 of them from brands that had never worked with her before. Her agent called it the Rihanna pivot. Her stylist called it trauma couture. Her lawyer called Ethan and gave him 24 hours to respond. Ethan was blindsided. He hadn't seen Lana in months, hadn't touched the footage in a year. When his assistant brought him the news, he thought it was a deep fake. Then he watched it. His voice went cold. That's not recent. The assistant looked terrified. Do you want me to get your lawyer? Yeah, Ethan whispered, and get me Lana's number. She didn't answer. Meanwhile, Lana gave her first exclusive to Good Morning America. She wore soft beige. Her hair was in waves. Her makeup was no makeup. She told America she was broken, but healing. That this wasn't about sex, it was about betrayal. That no woman should have to fear intimacy becoming ammunition. The host cried, Twitter screamed. She wasn't just a victim now, she was a symbol. And Hollywood loves symbols. Within 3 weeks she had signed a 12-minute deal to star in Emerald Thorns, replacing Sadie Vale, partnered with a major lingerie brand for a Reclaim Yourself campaign, been offered the cover of Time under the headline, The New Power of Saying No. The problem? Sadie Vale didn't believe a word of it. Sadie had worked with Lana years ago. She knew her ambition, knew her cruelty, knew she kept a list, literally, of every actress who beat her for a role, every critic who gave her less than 4 stars. Sadie reached out to Ethan, and Ethan started asking questions. They found the first crack in the armor through metadata. A friend of Ethan's worked at a cybersecurity firm. He analyzed the original leaked file and noticed it hadn't been exported from any of Ethan's devices. In fact, the timestamp metadata was 3 weeks off the date Ethan's iPhone said it was filmed. Someone had re-exported the file on a different device. Recently, the only person with access to the old phone? Lana. Lana's publicist went into overdrive. They blamed it on Ethan's alleged confusion, said he was trying to reframe the narrative, that he was lashing out because Lana had moved on. But behind closed doors, panic set in. Someone from her team leaked screenshots of Slack messages between her PR manager and stylist, discussing what to do if metadata becomes public. A Reddit thread titled "The Tape Was a Setup" went viral. In 24 hours, it had 2.3 million views. The facade began to tremble. And then came the podcast. A former assistant, fired for unauthorized makeup purchases, went on the Scandal Sheet podcast and spilled everything. She planned it. I saw the schedule. I saw the speech. The crying was practiced. She rehearsed it. The host asked, so she leaked her own tape? She didn't just leak it, the assistant said. She scripted it, like a scene, down to the second. Lana doubled down. She posted a black and white video of herself crying, said the attacks were misogyny, that women are never believed, that any woman who steps into the light becomes a target. She said, even if I had leaked it, what does that say about the world we live in? That a woman's body is scandal, but a man's crime is forgivable. The internet paused, briefly, but then someone uploaded a file to WeTransfer, a PDF titled Phoenix Strategy Deck. It contained 6 slides, all watermarked, confidential, all written by the cleaner. Slide 1. Narrative control. From victim to victory. Slide 3. Suggested audio cues for maximum empathy response. Slide 6. Projected profit and press ROI based on viral outrage conversion rates. And there it was, in black and white. Not just a setup, an operation. By the end of the month, Lana was no longer a symbol. She was a warning. Articles titled When Victimhood Becomes a Brand started circulating. Sponsors pulled deals. Twitter turned. Feminists who once praised her began issuing cautious statements. And Ethan? He filed suit. Defamation. Intentional emotional harm. Loss of income. He didn't want money. He wanted the truth. As for Lana, she stayed silent for 13 days. On the 14th, she posted a single image. A match. Burning. Caption, the phoenix always rises, even from ashes it created. Some called it a confession, some called it performance art. But the ones who knew her best, they called it what it really was, a warning shot. The story wasn't over, it was just getting dangerous. Chapter 2. The Turn. Silence is powerful in Hollywood, but only when you choose it. Lana Hart's silence wasn't chosen. It was demanded by crisis managers, agents, lawyers, and the same publicists who once knelt at her stilettos. The storm had gotten too big, too loud. Too many people had started whispering the same thing. She planned it, and worse, she profited from it. What had started as a flawless campaign for sympathy had become the most dissected public takedown since the Amber Heard trial. The media that once idolized her began circling like sharks. Her face was still everywhere, only now it was in op-eds titled Weaponizing Victimhood, the Lana Hart Story. Inside her $9.2 million home in the Hollywood Hills, Lana sat cross-legged on the floor of her dressing room, the same room where she'd practiced that now infamous broken woman speech. She stared at the mirror. No lights, no glam, no illusion. Just her, barefaced, rattled, and alone. Ethan Cole wasn't just fighting back. He was winning. His legal team was airtight, meticulous, brutal, and media savvy. They leaked just enough. A phone backup report, verified metadata anomalies, and a two-page statement from a digital forensics firm confirming the file Lana had never seen had been exported from her own laptop 2 days before it leaked. Then came the interview. Ethan sat down with The Collective, a sleek, no-frills journalism podcast with a reputation for fact-first storytelling. He didn't cry, he didn't lash out, he didn't even mention Lana by name. He just said, "I didn't do it, but I know who did, and it breaks me, because I loved her." The host leaned in like every listener in the world was holding their breath. "Why didn't you defend yourself earlier?" "Because she controlled the story before I knew I was in one." Silence. Then the quote that trended for days, "You think you're in love, but some people only love what they can use." By week 5, the legal momentum shifted. Lana's team had spent millions crafting a counter-narrative. They accused Ethan of gaslighting. They hinted at unreleased DMs. They even suggested a third party had hacked both phones. But nobody was buying it, because receipts don't lie, and Lana's were everywhere. Slack messages, planner entries, emails to Cassandra Moon, her alias for burner activity. One particular email outlined post-leak drip strategy, which press first, which podcast second, and which advocacy organizations would likely align for exposure. The final nail, an invoice from the cleaner. Her name was never printed on it, just a company, Sovereign Optics. The invoice listed narrative repositioning services billed at $480,000. The line items included leak pacing, viral sentiment mapping, and sympathy point maximization. When journalists uncovered the same LLC had worked on two other celebrity scandals later proven to be fabrications, Sovereign Optics deleted its website and disconnected its line. By then, it was too late. Screenshots circulated. Lana's name was connected directly to the campaign. She didn't just orchestrate a leak. She industrialized trauma manufacturing. Behind the scenes, things spiraled. Her lead role in Emerald Thorns was quietly recast. Sadie Vail stepped back in, without gloating. She simply tweeted, "Truth doesn't need a press release." Lana's partnerships vanished in a day. Three major sponsors pulled back to back. One statement read, "We support all survivors, but we don't support deception." Streaming platforms removed her limited series from trending tabs. Netflix ghosted her pitch meeting. A major fashion house dropped a planned capsule collection, deleting all preview posts without comment. And yet, she still wouldn't admit it, because she didn't see it as a lie. She saw it as performance art. In a private call with her crisis PR team, someone asked her, point blank, "Did you ever think this would go too far?" Lana didn't flinch. "Everything goes too far," she said. "That's the only way anything changes." It wasn't a denial. It was a philosophy. The public wanted a confession, but what they got was a memoir, unannounced, self-published, titled Citrell, The Art of the Narrative. It dropped digitally, no press tour, no foreword. The cover was a close-up of Lana's eyes, half in shadow. Inside, she never said she leaked the tape, but she never said she didn't. Instead, she wrote, "We live in a world where attention is a currency. So tell me, if men can build empires off women's pain, what happens when the woman owns the bank?" The book sold 20,000 copies in 24 hours. By day 3, it was pulled from Amazon after a copyright claim by one of her ex-assistants, who claimed a full chapter was plagiarized from his blog. Lana's mother, a retired school teacher in Idaho, gave a rare statement. I raised Lana to speak her truth. I just wish the truth didn't cost so many people everything. That quote headlined the New Yorker's profile. Lana Hart, the woman who played us all. Then came the final confrontation. Ethan sued for defamation and loss of income, totaling $18 million. He didn't want to settle. He wanted a public apology. But Lana's team, what was left of it, begged her to make a deal. Quietly, under seal. She refused. She wanted court. Because even now, with everything crumbling, she believed in one thing. She could still win the narrative. The courtroom was packed. Press badges, TikTokers, feminist journalists, men's rights podcasters, all elbowing for space on the same bench. Ethan's legal team was surgical. They played the tape, then showed the metadata, then the invoice, then the emails, all authenticated. When Lana took the stand, she was calm, too calm. Her lawyer asked, "Did you leak the tape?" She looked straight ahead. "No." "Did you plan the leak?" "No." "Do you believe Ethan Cole leaked it?" "I believe someone did." The prosecutor smiled. "And did this unknown person also send your own speech to five networks before the leak even happened?" Lana paused. "I believe in preparation." Gasps. "You wrote a statement for a crime before the crime existed." "Women are always expected to have a statement," she said. "I was just ahead of the expectation." The gallery murmured. She was still playing the role. But the audience had stopped applauding. The jury didn't deliberate long. They found in favor of Ethan, $12.5 million. More importantly, the judge ruled Lana had acted with reckless disregard for truth, a phrase that would haunt her next 5 years. She left the courtroom without speaking to press. No tears, no rage, just silence. Real, this time. In the weeks that followed, her agency dropped her. Her SAG membership was suspended pending ethics review. She was blacklisted from 5 major studios. A class action suit was filed by multiple former employees for psychological abuse, unpaid labor, and reputational endangerment. Lana disappeared. 6 months later, she resurfaced. A blurry paparazzi shot captured her walking out of a rehab center in Taos, New Mexico. No makeup, hood up, alone. TMZ ran the headline, "From Starlet to Scandal, Lana Hart Resurfaces After Downfall." But something in the photo stood out. She was holding a notebook. Zoomed in, its label read, "C. Terrell, TV Pilot Draft." The internet gasped. Was she scripting her own story again? The last public thing she ever posted was a video, deleted 3 hours later, but archived by fans. It was black and white. Just her voice. "I was never the villain. I was never the victim. I was the director. And you? You paid for the ticket."